Well, let's take out our notes as we talk about upgrading our love. I want to say thank you to Pastor Elwin and Pastor Jonathan for doing a superb job in their speaking, and just to see everyone just growing and increasing in their abilities, their competence, their character, everything that God's given to them. So thank you to those wonderful people. We got a great staff. Let me ask you, how many of you can stand a little upgrading in your love? Raise your hand. How many? Yeah, good. Some wives are raising their husband's hand. Raise your hand, Henry. Raise your hand. Yeah. But you know, upgrading love is not the most popular thing because it takes work. We'd rather just settle for a lesser love because it's filled with emotion. It seems much more blissful. But that quality of love will never sustain a marriage. It'll never sustain a relationship. It won't sustain even your faith. You got to upgrade that love. It's got to be better than what it is. But it's not popular. Because of the media that we have, you see, you know, 99.9% of all of the love affairs and everything is not between a husband and wife. It's between others. And hardly do you see a mature love on TV because it's not popular. And we learn that, and we take into our marriages a lower quality of love, and we move in with false expectations. Our media wars against upgrading love to something much more mature. In fact, you know what the worst show is, I think, on TV? Are our reality shows. That is so far from reality. It should be unreality shows. But they call it reality. And I'm thinking, no, that's not reality. I mean, when was the last time you could choose your wife in a hot tub of five babes that just stepped out of Glamour magazine? And they're all just, oh, I love you. Oh. And then you start disqualifying them one by one. Oh, you got one wrinkle on your neck. You're out. Your clothes too baggy. You're out. You don't give me the feeling. You're out. And then you pick one, the best babe of them all, and then they live happily ever after. That's all you see. But just wait a few years, the very one he chose going to have one wrinkle on her neck and her clothes going to look baggy and she won't make me feel so good all the time. So now he's on his ninth marriage probably. But you see that, you know, and it's all like, you're not looking good enough for me. But I was thinking about these guys. I'm thinking, what about him in a few years? You know, his big chest going to come on mudslide over his belt. And his bottom gonna come loose and gonna trail behind his calves as he walks. I think, yeah, we all get old, so you're gonna have to have a love that sustains you through the years. You know what I'm talking about? And we've gotta upgrade our love. Otherwise, we'll go into marriage with a junior high love. And we have false expectations. A junior high love is fine for junior hires. But not for adults, not for 21-year-olders, not for 24-year-olders. If you're going to be looking for a long-term kind of love, you better upgrade. It's not popular. It's going to require work. But the better, the faster, the sooner you do it, the better. But you got to do that. Otherwise, you go from a junior high love to, you know, that puppy love. And then you go from puppy love to kitty love. You know, you see the kitty that rubs its back against you and you go, oh, that kitty loves me. Someone, that cat don't love you. It's loving itself off your leg. Oh, it loved me. No, just loved you. And if you're not there, any leg will do. And we go with that into marriage. We think, huh? You see, upgrading is not popular because sometimes your love is going to require less emotion and a lot more character. When you upgrade your love, it's going to require less feeling and sometimes more choice. When you upgrade your love, sometimes there's going to be seasons where it's going to have less romantic bliss and more pure work. It's going to require sometimes of your love less overcoming your mistake and more overlooking their mistake. No, not endorsing it, just overlooking it for the sake of relationship. You're going to have to add words to your upgraded love like forgive, honesty, openness, communication, and serving. Because you realize that it's less about me. It's more about my spouse or others or a friend or God or just what's best. Less on who's right, more on what's right. Less on who's best, more on what's best. Less on what do I delight in, and more on what does God delight in? Understand? And it's an upgraded kind of love that has so much more depth to it because it ain't about me. Sometimes we love someone only until they no longer please us. And then it's like, well, you don't love me anymore. In other words, you don't serve me like a Shah of Iran or one Sheikh. How come you don't serve me? And it's like all about us. And my favorite story is a woman who takes her husband, he's dying. He goes into the hospital, she takes him into the hospital, and she says, I don't know what's wrong with my husband, he's dying. So the doctor checks him out and says, sir, you need to go back to the car and just wait there. I need to talk to your wife alone. So he goes, waits in the passenger side of the car, and the doctor says to the wife, he's dying of not enough love. She says, what? Yeah, you need to love him more. If he deserves love, I will love him, but otherwise, no. No. You don't understand. When he comes home, you got to love him. Like how? Well, when he comes home, give him a massage. Massage? Yeah, that's right. Take off his shoes. Give him like tea. What? That's right. He's dying of not enough love. Well, she goes to the car and sits behind the steering wheel. He's on the passenger side. And she's just thinking. And the husband says, well, what did the doctor say? She looks at him and said, he said, you're going to die. You see, sometimes it's all about me. We've got to upgrade our love. And that's why Paul says in the book of Philippians, let's read at the top of our notes together, Philippians 1:9. Would you read it with me? Go. I pray that your love may abound still more and more in real knowledge and all discernment. Would you underline knowledge and discernment? If the writer here, Paul, is saying, I pray that your love will excel still more or abound still more in knowledge and discernment, what he's suggesting is that there's probably a whole bunch of people that have a love that has no knowledge and is not very discerning. Did you know that you can have a quality of love that's not based on much knowledge and it's not very discerning? And so the first thing we're going to upgrade to is we need to upgrade to a love that is, would you write in your notes, knowledgeable and discerning. Knowledgeable and discerning. If you have trouble with spelling, it's right there on the board. Just some people I see, what's that again? Dis something. Yeah, it's discerning. What does that mean? Discerning is the ability to discriminate between what's right and wrong, what's false and what's true, what's going to pan out, what's not going to pan out. Someone who has good words but selfish motives, and someone has true motives even though he doesn't have good words. That discernment is absolutely critical. You have to have a love that's knowledgeable and discerning. Otherwise, you're going to settle for a love that's not knowledgeable and not very discerning. And it's going to waste you years of wrong relationships. That can happen even in people's relationship with God. You can see some people that are just super zealous for God. You think, oh, wow, this guy's like an apostle or a saint or something. And then the next year, poof, the guy's not even serving God anymore. They're out doing something weird. You think, what happened? That's what Paul says to the book in the book of Romans. Let's read what it says about zeal. Go. For I testify about them that they have a zeal for God, but not in accordance with. Yeah, it's a zeal, but they don't know what they're doing yet. It's an immature, low-quality faith. He's saying you've got to add to your faith knowledge still. You've got to add to your faith discernment. You've got to add to your faith. That's what Peter says later on in the New Testament. Add to your faith brotherly love and kindness. So faith is sort of like the catch-all. Now you got to fill it with character. Sometimes we have an empty faith without works. God is saying you got to fill it with these things. Otherwise, you're going to have a zeal, but it's not according to knowledge. And you're going to go off on tangents and you'll think you're really right there and it's off. And someone that has a discernment can see that. And the same is true in love. If you don't have a discerning love, especially for sisters, you know, when I see some of these beautiful young ladies, they have a love that's just so immature, that's not discerning at all. I think, no, you've got to upgrade your love. Otherwise, you'll lose years. Pretty young lady. And they're just head over heels over these weird people, weird guys. It's like these guys on there on dope, one nostril's this big from snorting cocaine all the time. And they run into, you know, into a fight with a stapler. And so they got stuff all over and their ears got holes this big in them. and they're just, and they're dressed in black and they're stoned. Oh, but he said I'm pretty. Oh, I love him so much. I said, come on, wake up, girl. No, but I love him. You love him? Yeah, I love him. You turn to the guy as, you know, this weird guy, and you say, what do you think about her? Do you love her? Oh, any leg will do. No, guys are like, loser. Don't wake up. There's one girl, I tell you, she called, this is a true story. She called me up and she said, my boyfriend, he wants to sleep with me and go to bed with me. And I said, no, no, no. And he said, if I don't, he's going to kill himself. What should I do? I heard that. I said, give him the gun. What? I could not believe. He is looking for sex, and if you don't, he's going to kill himself. He's got a major problem. He's got him. And don't you feel guilty. Now, by the way, I was just joking about that. Because people are going to write me, you said what about him? You're going to kill him? Joke. Maybe. But we've got to have a knowledgeable and discerning. You know what I'm saying? You've got to have a knowledgeable and a discerning love. Otherwise, if you don't have those qualities, it will not sustain your future. You're going to run into rabbit holes that are dead-ended, and you're going to be filled with sorrow and regret your whole life. As I said before, here's the mainstream of walking with God. Sometimes we go off because our love is not very knowledgeable, not very discerning. We go way off like this, and God has to move us back here. And then we go off again because we don't have a knowledgeable and discerning love. And then we hit a dead end. God has to move us back. And you say, oh, God's really working in my life. Yeah, but he's working just to get you back on the mainstream, your main street. You haven't advanced at all. Oh, but God's really working in my life. But yeah, but you haven't even moved forward an inch. Because God has to constantly bring you back onto Main Street. But if you stay on Main Street and you grow in your love, you'll start moving this way. Now, you know why it's so important for us to upgrade our love? And I'm not just kind of going off. The reason I'm passionate about it is because of this. The greatest commandment of all is to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And with that, you can love your neighbor as yourself. Now, watch this. If you got love wrong, everything else is going to be wrong. If love is foggy and your definition is foggy, everything else in life is going to be foggy because he says that's the greatest commandment of all. Everything else hinges on that. You get that foggy, everything else is going to be foggy. But watch, you get that right, everything starts to clear up. If your love becomes a knowledgeable and a discerning love, you'll be able to discern everything. It's like going, life becomes high definition. Everything clears up. Oh, I understand this. No, I won't go down that road. No, I think I'll do this instead of that. Thank you. No, why? Because you're getting your love correct between you and God, and it's going to flow onto one another. And you understand God's love for you, and there's a discernment that begins to come. And it's going to be applicable and transferable to your business, to your friendships, to your marriage, to your dating, to when you have kids. Everything starts to clear up because the core is defined correctly and it's accurate. If you want to find out what God holds valuable, just see what the devil counterfeits. The things he loves to counterfeit will tell you what God holds very, very dear. Because the enemy knows he can't destroy love, so he'll just counterfeit it. And then people buy into his counterfeit because it's cheaper, easier to enter into, not as big of a threshold. And it's easier and gives you instant gratification, one night stands, and it's quick. And then it's filled with regret. He counterfeits the things that God holds most important. Relationships, he'll counterfeit that. Friendships between two brothers, he'll counterfeit that into something else. And then we'll start to endorse those things. And it's a counterfeit filled with regrets. That's why it's so important for us to always come back and redefine and upgrade what God has called us to understand well. Because especially love, it affects everything else. Everything goes into high definition. Like, wow. Remember the old films, like, you know, you watch TV. Remember like Bonanza or Little House on the Prairie? You thought, wow, it's so nice. But you put it next to a high definition thing, you go, oh, that's so fuzzy. Oh, that's old. Oh, I thought it was nice. How many of you, you know, remember those movies? Raise your hand. Yeah, it's because you're old. And I don't. I understand these because I research them. But I look at these juxtaposed to the high def and I think, wow, it used to look so nice, but it's pretty fuzzy. And then high definition, whoo. It's like when you upgrade your love, everything, you start to understand things better. You get it. God is saying you need to upgrade all of us to a knowledgeable and discerning love. Otherwise, we'll settle for a love that's not very knowledgeable and it's not that discerning. So the first is upgrading to a knowledgeable, discerning love. Let's take a look at number two in upgrading our love. And let's read the scripture first, and then we'll fill in the blank. So let's read under number two. Would you read it with me? 1 Peter 4:8. Go. Above all, keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins. I'm going to ask you to circle a word, but it's not love. It's fervent. Keep fervent. You know what the word fervent is? He's saying, if you will keep a love that is fervent, it will be able to be a love that covers a multitude of sins. You'll be able to embrace more people. Your relationships will be better. Well, what kind of love is that? A fervent. Keep fervent. You know what that word fervent means? In the Greek, it's a straining and a stretching love. That's a quality of love. Would you write that in number two? A love that is stretching and straining. Stretching and straining. That means there's an elastic quality about love. You see, some of our love is static. If you like what I like, look like I want you to look, act like I want you to act, say what I want you to say, do what I want you to do, and nothing more, then I will love you. But don't test that. Because as soon as it's tested, we snap. We don't stretch. We just snap. I snapped. Well, why? Because my love is static and I can't stretch or strain. But the Bible says a love that's able to be stretched a little bit, a love that's willing to be strained a little bit, is a love that's going to cover a multitude of sins. How many of you have people in your life that sort of stretch and strain your love? Raise your hand. Yeah, don't look to the left. Don't look to the right. Yeah, I understand. Yep. Yeah, it's a stretching and a straining love. That's the kind of love or the quality of love that Jesus had for the world. Just think of the multitude of sins that he had to embrace. No, not endorse. Because sometimes people say, well, Wayne, if I stretch my love to include so-and-so that's not doing right stuff, then that means I'm okay with that mess up and the things that they're doing. No, it does not mean you give credence to it. Doesn't mean you endorse it. Doesn't even mean that you like it. No. But I still will deal with that, but I deal with it in love rather than in anger. Because when it's in anger, you're opposing. It's a war. When you do it in love, you still deal with it, but it's in the midst of acceptance. It's a family thing. It's something in the kingdom. If you don't, you deal with it, but it's I'm on this side, you're on that side. When you love and still deal with it, we're on the same side. See the difference? Sometimes we think, well, if you love that person, that means whatever they do is fine. No, you're not passive about sin. It's just that we're on the same side. That's why marriages break up so quickly, is because we don't embrace, we don't have a stretching and straining love, but we still deal. You get that together first. Well, it's a war, and then you have to make a truce to just live together. But if we say, no, divorce is not an option. We're going to deal with this. We're going to deal with it. And we're working on it, but we're going to be on the same side. And then, oh. You see, if you think about God's love, when it's stretched and strained to include you and me, with all of our faults and all of our foibles and all of our warts, the Lord saw that in the midst of that sin, did he, when he embraced us with sin and all, does that mean he endorsed my sin? Not at all. But here's what God said. In the middle of all of that mess up, in the middle of all of that sin, is someone for whom I died. And in order to reach that person, I've got to embrace everything about them. And then watch this. As the Lord pulls me closer and pulls you closer, the sin seems to leach out. It dilutes. it is removed, leaving you and him alone as God and child. And the same kind of love God has for the world, he's saying, we need to upgrade that. Otherwise, we'll never reach our neighbors. Because you see, that's the kind of love it's going to require. Think about it. There's a big difference between friends and neighbors. God said, love thy friends. No, love thy, you know why? Because listen to this. Here's a difference. A friend is someone you choose. Your neighbor is someone God chooses. A friend you have choice in. Neighbor, no choice. Friend, I chose. Neighbor, God chose. So God never said, love thy friends. I'll do that. No, he said, love thy neighbor. Well, you see, because neighbor is going to require a stretching and a straining love. Now, a neighbor can turn into a friend, but that transformation can only happen with a stretching and straining love. In the workplace, you have neighbors. Where you live, neighbors. Church, neighbors. Oh, they'll turn into friends, but it requires a quality of love that embraces and changes. That you're on the same side first, not at war until. See the difference? We're on the same side and we resolve. We're not on opposite sides until you change. Especially in a marriage, that kind of love is so important. And with neighbors. I had a neighbor. I was pastoring before I came to Hawaii, and I had a neighbor named Dave Brown. I remember Anna and I bought our first house, second house, when Amy was born, and I was only about 20-some years old, and so we purchased $34,000. It was just a fixer-upper, but I actually sold my 12-string Ovation guitar to get enough money to landscape our front yard, and so I was really wanting to make sure this house looked nice. I painted it, and then I landscaped it, manicured, edged all the grass, planted new grass, you know, and edged it. And then put a nice Japanese lace leaf maple and some Japanese rocks. And it was a beautiful, beautiful, quaint little house. Well, not so my neighbor. It was a rental. This guy was a biker. He was a grease monkey. He'd smoke dope and drink beer out on his front lawn. He actually was, this is a true story, rebuilding his Harley Davidson in his living room. Been living with this girl, and the grass was so tall, and this dog barked all the time in the backyard. And he would bring home parts to cars. I'm sure he's borrowing them from other cars. And he'd stack this stuff up in his garage and sell out of his garage. So I thought, Midnight Auto Supply. That's what it was. And he was just really gruff. And his house and his yard looked terrible. And I remember mowing my lawn, and, you know, because I was so manicured, I wanted to be, when I even mowed it, I wanted to have straight lines, you know, like baseball field and in the National Baseball League. And I wanted to be really nice with these square patches and had to do it the right way. And I looked over at his yard, and I would mow mine, look at it, and I would pray, oh God, move him. And I would just, you know, wrong prayer. But I thought, oh, just have him move, oh God. Sell his house, something. And so I would mow my lawn, and then I'd grumble about his yard. It's so ugly, just running down our neighborhood. And each time I'd go out to mow my lawn, I'd grumble. Well, after a while, I noticed police coming through our cul-de-sac quite often, like that his house was under surveillance. So I thought, uh-oh, he knows he's got this Midnight Auto Supply deal going. And so I remember one day I was mowing my lawn, and I was saying, oh God, would you just remove that guy or make him a Christian or something, Lord, because it's just terrible. And the Lord just spoke to me in my heart, and he said, well, if you want his lawn looking better, then go mow it yourself. And I remember stopping for a second, looking at, I don't have enough gas. Sorry. You know, but I thought, I just still remember saying that to God. No more enough gas. And so I put my lawnmower away. And you know how when God puts something on your heart, he doesn't let it go? And so I walked in the house. oh, okay. And so I put gas and I went next door. Now, two things I was afraid of. One, I was concerned that he would come home and think I was like, you know, looking for empty beer bottles to take to the 7-Eleven for money, and he'd shoot me or something. So I thought, oh man, I don't want him to come home and think I'm here with somebody weird, you know. And then the second thing, I didn't want people to drive through and go, oh look, Dave Brown. Oh, he hired a Japanese gardener. Oh my. I didn't want that either. So quickly I mow his lawn. Then when I put the lawnmower away, I think, man, this, I feel so good because I know he's going to come home, see that his grass has been mowed, see that I did it. He's going to come over to my place, fall on his knees, repent, and become a Christian. I thought, wow, I'm just so excited. So I was watching out the window for him coming home. And he comes home. He doesn't even notice his yard has been mowed. He goes in there and starts working on his motorcycle, and his whole front rug is all greasy and everything. And I thought, oh, forget it. Well, about 3 weeks later, I guess he's realizing it's getting hot, you know, because the police are having his house under surveillance. So one Saturday, he's putting all of his parts in the back of his pickup. And he was trudging through, trying to push an engine up these 2 2x4s into his pickup. So I went over and I thought, well, maybe I'll help him and just show him some love, you know. And so I went over and I said, hey, Dave. And he grunts a lot. Mm. Hey, you need some help?
Yeah.
So I said, oh, here, let me help you. And so I started helping him put all this. We packed this pickup up with parts. And then I said to him, what are you going to do with it? He said, I'm going to take it to the dump. You're just going to throw it away?
Yep.
I said, well, how are you going to get it out of the truck?
I don't know.
I said, you need help?
Yep.
That's it. Cool, I'll go with you then. So I get in this truck and the windows are up because it's kind of wintertime. So we're driving down the road and he pulls out this biggest doobie you've ever seen and he lights it up. You want a hit, man? I said, no. I'm a pastor of a church and all. Oh, it's cool. I'm glad you got religion, man. And so he's toking on this thing. Now the cab is filled with smoke. So I crack the window, you know, the vent. And you know when you open up your vent, pulls all the stuff your way. So I could just see, oh man, I started, you know, the road was starting to go wide. But I didn't inhale. So I'm going down the road. And I could just see the newspaper, you know, headlines the next day. Pastor busted in truck with stolen parts. Sitting on the curb, stoned. You know? So finally, we made it to the dump, and we unloaded all of the stuff. Till this day, I don't remember any of that. But we made it back home, and on the way home, he said, "Now, what church do you go to?" I said, "Oh, right down the street." And I explained it to him, and I said, "Do you ever think about God?"
Yeah, I think about God.
So I said, "Yeah, well, you know, you should think about it a little bit more." But you know, here's a cool thing. This is true. The next week, or maybe 2 weeks later, here in the back comes Dave Brown and his girlfriend. Of course, he's got his leathers on. He's standing in the back like this. But he started coming to church and just observing at first from the back. And then a month later, month and a half, Anna and I get in the mail an invitation to his wedding. He's going to get married. And he gets married to his girlfriend. And then they keep coming to church. He received Christ. And he's still walking with God today. Is that a great story or what? And I think that kind of transformation or redemption could never be possible unless you have a stretching and a straining love for a neighbor. No, it doesn't mean you endorse it. You understand what he's doing? It just means you got to have a stretching and a straining love. That's the quality of love that ended us up here because God's love embraced us and was stretching and straining for us. That's an upgrade in love. And so God speaks to us about that. There's going to be times people will be a little bit of a chafing to us. But if we choose, because you still have a choice to say no, and I'm going to marginalize him. But if we choose to stretch and strain that love right there, when it stretches and strains, God says, whoa, there you go. That's an upgrade. Now your love has an elasticity about it. And that's the kind of love that'll change the world. That's the kind of love I had for the world. That would cover a multitude of sins. That's the kind of love that you're going to need for your marriage, for your workplace, for your relationships. That's it. You're upgrading your love. It's a choice we have to make on a daily basis. Because number three, would you write down the third quality in upgrading our love? It has to be a love that's growing daily. growing daily. No, not just one kind of love and that's it. No, it's because love is sort of a living entity and it has to be growing, has to be maintained. In fact, let's read what he says in Philippians 1:9. Go. I pray that your love may abound still more and yeah, there's a growing quality about it. It's not static. In the next one, in 1 Thessalonians, go. May the Lord cause you to increase and abound in love for one another. May increase and abound. It's a love that grows daily. That's why it's so important for us to be people of daily devotions. When you're sitting before God's Word, little by little, definitions about love are recalibrated. From a junior high school love to, oh, I need to recalibrate that. Oh, that love has to be, oh, that perception, that perspective has to be changed. Because, man, I tell you, we're going to learn all kinds of stuff from the world and from our media. You're going to learn it incorrectly. They're going to sell you a quality of love that will never sustain life. But it looks good and it's painted well and it's marketed brilliantly. That's why you need to hear what God has to say about the same issues, because then you recalibrate your perspective and you start to develop a love that is knowledgeable and discerning. And that will come from God's Word on a daily basis. And it has to be daily. You may have just read, as doing your devotions, John chapter 4, Jesus was speaking with a woman at the well. And she said to him, what kind of water are you going for? And Jesus said, well, I come to give you water unto eternal life. And this lady said, whoo, give me that kind of water so I don't have to keep coming here. That's what she said. And I looked at that and I thought, you know, that's just like us. We want that once and for all fix so that I don't have to worry about growing or stretching or just give me that pill, that elixir that changes everything once and for all. But it doesn't work that way. It's the daily coming to Him. As you come to Him again and again, and you say, Lord, I need healing. You know what? You keep coming to Him like this. Healing is a result, but it's not just the healing that is the gift. It is the coming to Him that develops that heart that's like His. And when God gives you healing, He gives you that persevering. He gives you that fortitude. He gives you that enduring quality. And He says, yeah, I'll give you healing, but this is what's going to sustain your life. This is the stuff that'll be transferable. Healing is for you. This is for your life and for everybody else. But if we just kind of do a once and for all kind of thing, we would have terrible character. And we'd be just looking for God to be our sugar daddy. But as you keep coming to Him, you develop something of your heart gets scrubbed. Something of your soul gets renewed. And it's in the dailiness of coming to Him that you're transformed. And He gives you healing to boot. But this is the thing. Story is told of a missionary who in Africa was working with a wonderful village. And a man had come to Christ and was so thankful. Just then, however, the missionary was moved to a village 30 miles away. Christmas time came. It was a bit rainy in the monsoon season, but he heard a knock on his door almost towards evening. He opened the door, and one of the men that he had led to Christ in that former village had walked the whole way, 30 miles. And he said, I came to give you a present at Christmas. The missionary was just so thankful. And he took this gift and he said, please come sit down. The man sat down for a while and he opened it up, and it was a simple giraffe that the man had carved himself to make for the gift. He said, oh, thank you for this gift. That was so nice of you. He said, did you walk here? He said, yes, I did. He said, that's 30 miles. It's okay. It's raining. It's okay. I'm taking you back. You get in the car and the Jeep and I'm going to take you back. No. I will walk back. He said, no, you walked 30 miles to give me this. He said, yes. You walked 30 miles for this gift? And the man said, oh, no, not just that. That's not the only gift. My walk is a part of the gift. I will walk back. You see, sometimes God has a gift for us in healing, but it's the walk, it's the dailiness that impresses Him the most. And it gives to you a character and a depth and an insight and a perspective and a discernment that you can't get over here. It's in the dailiness. I remember when I went to Bible college, a college similar to Pacific Rim Bible College, and one of the reasons we began Pacific Rim Bible College is partly because I knew how much it had changed my life in those years of going to Bible college, and many more young people that are emerging leaders are looking for some place that will help them to get their faith accurate, to get their character deep, to get their vision wide, and to get their skills honed. And we want Pacific Rim Bible College to do that. And I went to these classes. Some were great, but some were like boring, boring, boring. I'd sit in class and I just, oh man, it was just so hard to keep my eyes open because these guys bored you to death. And I remember grumbling to God saying, God, if you don't change these teachers, I'm going to die of boredom. At the end of the year, I can't even graduate. I'll be dead. Dead of just boredom. And I remember as I was complaining, God just quietly spoke to my heart. And he said, Wayne, do you think I knew about these classes before you enrolled? Do you think I knew about them? Or was it after you went to these boring classes, I said, oh, sorry. Oh, I didn't know they were so boring. Oh, gomen ne. Sorry. God is part Japanese. And so he said, don't you think I knew? I said, yeah. And yet I had you go. But I'm not going to learn anything out of the classes. What if the real lesson isn't found in the classes? What if the real lesson that I want you to learn is the dailiness of obeying my call to go there? Even if you get very little out of it, just think about it. The daily discipline of getting yourself up, doing the assignments, even though it might be over your head or not that interesting, and you develop a perseverance. You develop an obedience. That's not always so fun because there's times they're going to ask you to do things in life that's not going to have big rewards to it. It's just going to have big work to it. But yet you do it out of obedience, not because of what you can get. And you go to those classes and you develop an endurance, a forbearance. And when you're done, you get little out of the class, but look what you got from just obeying me. You see this discipline, and this perseverance, and this forbearing, and this willingness to continue regardless? You see that? That's what's transferable. That's what I wanted you to get. You can transfer that to your marriage. You can transfer. You won't transfer the class, but you can transfer the dailiness of the disciplines of it. That's the gift. It's the walk, not the giraffe. And that's transferable to life. And when I understood that, I thought, ooh, I should pay double for tuition because that's a great class. And still today, I understand that to be true. It's a dailiness. And when you've got that kind of love, a love that is knowledgeable and discerning, and you have upgraded your love to one that is a love that is growing daily and a love that is straining and stretching, life goes into high definition. What do you think? Amen.